Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and delighted to welcome Alison Metcalf, who is head of tourism for North America. And Alison, you're very welcome indeed.
Great to be here, Adrian.
Now, it would be, you know, safe to say that your greatest competitor is yourself in terms of tourism and the most magnificent increase in figures every year. So that's a joyful kind of position to be in on this Easter week.
It is. I mean, it's a great position to be in. As you said, Adrian, we've had two record years in terms of Irish tourism from the United States to Ireland. Last year, 2015, we welcomed close to 1.2 million visitors, which is really quite staggering. It's a 14% increase over the previous year when we hit our magic million. So it's been a couple of very good years. We've built back very steadily from the economic downturn of 9 and 10. And I think the point to make is that we've, in building back and in growing our business to record levels, we've actually gained market share from our European competitors. Because when we look at the U.S. outbound market, the travel market to Europe, which is highly competitive, it increased by about 4% last year. So we increased by 14%. So we have gained share. And a lot of that has been a result of the increase in direct air access.
It's not an exaggeration to say that Ireland's economic recovery really depends very much on tourism and inward tourism to Ireland. We know there are other areas as well, exports and obviously inward investment, but singularly the tourism industry in Ireland, you know, north and south, because it is a north and south body, it's an all-Ireland body, depends really, really very heavily on that.
It does. I mean, in tourism on the island of Ireland supports close to about 240,000 jobs, north and south. So it's an industry that permeates into every corner of the island, every town, city and village. And that multiplier effect that it has in generating jobs has been quite significant. And tourism has made one of the largest contributions to new job creation over the last number of years. And I think that is recognized by government and both governments, but particularly the Republic of Ireland government. We've certainly seen some measures which have allowed the tourism industry to remain very competitive. They cut the VAT to 9% on hotels and on accommodation services, and that has certainly helped us stay incredibly competitive. They reduced the tourist tax to zero, so again, the travel tax. So those measures have helped enormously, and they've also managed to maintain their investment in marketing through organizations like Tourism Ireland internationally, and obviously the work that is done on the ground at home by Fáilte Ireland and in Northern Ireland by Tourism Northern Ireland. So we've managed to sort of continue with that investment when other countries and other destinations have pulled back. And I think when the market turned around and demand came back, we were ready to satisfy that untapped potential. And I think that's contributed to us gaining market share.
When you roll out a marketing plan or a tourism plan for 2015, across the world, how do you, you know, add or how do you present that to, you know, attract even more people?
Well, we're charged with putting together a marketing plan on an annual basis. Tourism Ireland has a three-year corporate plan, and here in the United States, we reviewed the U.S. market back in 2012, 2013, and we set ourselves a growth target of 20% between 2013 and 2015. We've already exceeded that after 2 years. So the target, whilst in percentage terms, we're looking for a further 6% growth this year, it's building off a much bigger base. So my job here in North America, responsible for the U.S. and Canada, is to, I guess, work as hard as possible to get as much money and much investment into this market, because both the U.S. and Canada are very important markets. Not only are they large markets from a volume perspective, but Americans and Canadians like to travel and stay a long time, and they spend. So the impact that they have on the economy is very significant. So we put our our plan together. We pay a lot of attention to who we're targeting. We've done a lot of research in terms of we have a good handle on who we believe are the people that offer the best prospects to travel. We call them culturally curious. And we also have a segment called the social energizers, the younger traveler. And we've seen good growth from that segment over the last number of years. So we invest a lot of time and money in research, and we make sure that the dollars we do invest in this market are as targeted and as focused and as measured as possible.
You know, ease of access to Ireland too plays a big role. Of course, the chicken and the egg, in the sense that airlines, servicing Ireland obviously would not do so unless the traffic was there and that their investment would be good. So that is also, though, it opens up a lot of North America in terms of ease.
Absolutely. I mean, if you can't get there, it's very hard to grow business, and particularly when we're in Ireland. So we've seen significant increase in direct air access over the last 3 years. Back in 2013, we had about a 25% increase. Last year, we had about another 15 or 16%. And this year, we've got another 15% increase in direct air access. So what that really means is it opens up huge opportunity, but also challenges. Opportunity to grow on our business, and the challenges that we have is that we want to work very closely with the airlines to keep them flying and to keep them flying as full as possible and to keep them flying year round. So this year we have direct air services now from 11 gateways. About 40,000 seats are leaving those 11 gateways every week for Ireland. And some of those new services include a new service from Los Angeles to Dublin from Ethiopian Airlines, which will be flying 3 times a week starting June 20th. Aer Lingus will be starting their new Washington service in May, and United Airlines will be starting a new service from Chicago to Dublin. And on top of that, all of the existing services, many of them will see increases in capacity, such as the San Francisco service that Aer Lingus operate, going from 5 days a week to 7, and a new daytime service from JFK to Dublin. So for the first time, you'll be able to get to Dublin without having to fly overnight, which I think is, you know, going to be great news for a lot of travelers.
Yeah, it is. Old habits being hard to break. We've got to try that. Imagine, you know, again, getting into Ireland at a reasonable, for business people as well.
It
makes...
If you're going to Dublin, it makes a lot of sense because you will get in there, I think, around 11 o'clock. If you're going onward, it's more difficult. But if you're going to Dublin, it means that you leave JFK at around, you know, close to noon, and you get there at about 11 o'clock at night, and you can head straight to your hotel and have a nice night's sleep.
How about that? Yeah. For a change.
Yeah, for a change. Yeah.
There's the Jump Into Ireland campaign. Isn't it? It's a brand in itself that has actually worked and worked well.
It has, and we were saying that, you know, Ireland is full of immersive and authentic experiences. We feel that Ireland is a destination, and for your listeners out there, I'm sure that they already know this, but it's a destination where it's very easy to scratch below the surface. It's very easy to engage with people, with the landscape, with the culture. We actually want you to jump in and feel part of the of being in Ireland, almost live like a local. It's not a destination that you have to just sort of tour around, take a passive kind of action and tick off the sites. Some people want to do that, and that's absolutely fine. But we invite you to get involved, and whether that's through conversation with people, through music, through culture, through language, you have a lot of fun in Ireland. And so we invite people to jump in and scratch below the surface.
The Wild Atlantic Way, and particularly for those of us who come from the west of Ireland, we would say, my God, for something that we grew up in and centuries before us, the Wild Atlantic Way, probably one of the feathers in the cap of tourism Ireland. This was and is considered to be probably one of the best coastal routes in Europe, or many would say, you know, in the world. How did that come about?
Well, it's certainly the longest defined coastal route in the world, and which is sometimes, when you think about the size of Ireland, you think, how could that be? But it is, it's 1,600 miles. I mean, the coastline, Adrian, you know, it was always there. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've done is, and Tourism Ireland is responsible for marketing it, but it is the development agencies on the ground, it's the local tourism authorities, it's the characters, it's the tourism providers. We've actually branded it. We've brought it together and created a number of unique experiences along the way. So there's about 156 discovery points. There's interpretation along the way. And there's an opportunity, again, to get involved in unique and immersive experiences. So again, whether it's the Wild Atlantic Way for golf, whether it's the Wild Atlantic Way for food, whether it's for castles, for hiking, there's something for everybody. And what it has done is that whilst the gateway to the Wild Atlantic Way really is Shannon Airport, we've got very right. good air access from the United States, but it's also, it runs from obviously Donegal, the Inishowen Peninsula, all the way down to Kinsale in County Cork. So it's actually opened up probably certainly Galway North to a greater extent than in the past, because typically the southern part of the Wild Atlantic was always more trafficked yes. than other parts of the northwest. So it's been a great success so far. I mean, it's not a one-year theme or campaign. It's a real live tourism vacation experience. It's a 10-year project. It continues to grow. And I think it's just great the way so many people, not just the hardcore tourism providers, but locals have got involved and have gained a sense of pride, and also realized how important yeah. tourism is to their
and town. It could hardly village. Work without locals and their no. potential as they see it. There are some areas, some of the most beautiful areas of Ireland, as you mentioned correctly, mm-hmm. north of Galway.
That's right.
But investment there was minimal because many people felt that it wouldn't get the traffic.
Well, that's right. And what is interesting from Tourism Ireland's perspective and from just a marketing perspective is that we work very closely with the Irish industry and with US tour operators here to promote and sell Ireland. But when they come out on road shows and sales missions and we travel all across the United States, we now have hoteliers and attractions talking about they're located at a certain point along the Wild Atlantic Way. So it's
right.
a brand now which is really gaining recognition, and people have something to mobilize under and create a sense of place.
And for many who would want to experience that in the past, the coach tours, which is still not only holding its own, but is still growing, has indeed made tremendous provisions. But see, Tourism Ireland also, whereas 1,600 miles is a bit unnerving just to imagine it, but it has been segmented, to make the entire thing very attractive. But if the goal is to go to Ireland and drive 1,600 miles, no, it's not. That's not what it is.
It isn't, and I think that's a very good point. I mean, I think it is. It's been set up in such a way that it's divided into different segments. You can join it at any point along the way,
yeah.
and there are itineraries. If you're in a self-drive car and you want to do your own self-drive itinerary, there are 3 and 4 day itineraries at different points. So you could do the northwest, you can do the midwest, you can do the southwest. You can do a themed itinerary, and you'll find lots of information on island.com for those. A lot of the tour operators are also programming the Wild Atlantic Way, both through escorted tour programs as well as the independent travelers. So people shouldn't be put off by 1,600 miles. There'll always be those people that want to drive everything from start to finish to say they've done it, but we hope that people will certainly do sections of it and come back.
Yeah. Now, also, excuse me, on the east side of Ireland again, Dublin. Dublin, one would imagine that anything that one would need to know about Dublin has already been rolled out. However, there's a new addition to Dublin.
Dublin, I think, is UNESCO City of Culture, or UNESCO City of Literature, I should say. I think it's a starting point for many people on their trips, but there's been a lot of investment in the product on the ground. So there's a series of new, it's called the Dubline, but it's a series of new discovery walks. So again, you can explore on foot different parts of the city. They're themed, whether you want to be in the Liberties area, or you want to do something that takes you way up to Phoenix Park, or you want to do a themed Viking walk. There's lots of new product there. and experiences there. There's also we're also trying to promote the fact that, you know, Dublin is, let's face it, it's on Dublin Bay, it's a coastal city, and not everybody realizes that. So that Dublin Plus experience, whether you want to, you know, hop on a boat and do a Dublin Bay cruise, you can obviously go south of the city, or you can go north of the city up to Malahide or to Howth or somewhere, or down to further down also to Wicklow as well. I mean, the day trips in there. So I think it's something that not everybody realizes. They see Dublin as that urban experience, and offering a very vibrant cultural experience. But there's also opportunities to get out onto the water, opportunities to get down into the Wicklow Mountains, and all of these are very accessible. And that's, I think, the great thing about so many of our cities, whether it's Dublin or Belfast or Galway. They're small enough, but still interesting enough. There's still plenty of things to do, but you can still get out into the countryside very quickly. And that's not true, as we know, with a lot of larger, sprawling, American cities or cities elsewhere in Europe.
For those who keep track of dates and occasions, 150 years ago, William Butler Yeats was born, and I'm sure that the Yeats family didn't think that, you know, a century and a half later there would be, you know, such an interest worldwide in, obviously, in fans of Yeats.
Absolutely. I mean, so we are celebrating Yeats 150, as you say. There's going to be a four-day festival of poetry. Yeats, the festival starts on June the 13th. So there's going to be a lot of things happening throughout the year, linking, obviously, Yeats's association with the Abbey and with Dublin, but also clearly with Sligo and other parts of the west of Ireland, where he sought a lot of his inspiration. And there's a lot of fun things happening. I mean, in Sligo at Hardigan's Pub, they're having something called Yeats at One. So at 1 o'clock every day for 365 days in 2015, somebody will be reciting Yeats poetry out loud. It's those types of things that I think are, you know, they're unique, they're very sort of unplanned, they're very sort of spontaneous. Those are the things that make Ireland different, these quirky things. And so Yeats is obviously an opportunity for us to, I think, promote the greater and the richer literary tradition that it is so clearly associated with Ireland, and obviously with Dublin as UNESCO City of Literature. So it's something of great interest to our culturally curious travellers who are travelling to Ireland for history, heritage and scenery, and we are a city of words and a country of words.
The Yeats Society, obviously, in the United States, and particularly on the East Coast here, very active society, so it is of particular interest, obviously, to people. The recognition and the following of Yeats, just as a brand, my God.
Oh, yes, I think anybody that's interested in literature, particularly Irish literature, Yeats is at the fore. I mean, I think for many of us, we studied it at school, you know. We all have our favourites. But so anybody interested in literature, this is a great year to go. But, of course, Yeats can be explored and followed through trails and at the Writers' Museum and elsewhere every year.
The dollar versus the euro.
Never been better value.
I know. And, I'm sure some would be tempted to say, you better go now because it won't last. But the truth of the matter is it's fantastic.
It is. I mean, obviously, the euro has weakened, and the US dollar is around, I think, as of today, probably around 108, 109. But so it's about 15% better value than it was at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And who knows where it will end up. But the value was there already. The value has just got even better. In fact, the whole of Europe has got more competitive. But Ireland is very competitive in terms of its accommodation rates when we look at the rest of Europe. So there has never been a better time to go. I would encourage as many people to certainly look at it this year. And I think with falling oil prices as well as the strengthening of the dollar, two very good reasons to consider traveling. And you're beginning to see that both of those factors impacting on airfares. I mean, obviously we have more airlift, therefore the prices do tend to be more competitive. But the fares this year are very competitive, even in peak season. And Ireland is
particularly in peak season when we've all gotten used to what used to be a shoulder season and would expect to pay much more. But there's a levelling off for peak season as well.
There is, I think. And obviously people do realise that, you know, fares tend to sort of go down after Labour Day instead of early September. But I think that you don't see quite the same peaks and troughs that you used to see. I think a lot of that is obviously a result of increased capacity. And we've certainly seen significant growth in travel from the United States in quarter four, in that sort of October, November, December period. And we've been trying to sort of, you know, change the narrative, for want of a better word, to convince people that people are traveling to Europe. They're going to London, Paris, Rome in the fall. Why not Dublin? Why not Ireland? Why not Belfast and Galway? We have a tremendous festival season, temperate climate, better value, less crowded. And I think people are recognizing that fact. And we saw an 18% growth in our numbers during that period last year.
You know, on a personal note, I do want to acknowledge and thank Tourism Ireland. Thank you. As CEO of North America, for sponsoring our news and sports. And this is something that goes back decades, but it is indeed a very significant part of our programming. And so again, thank you. We want to thank you for that.
It's our pleasure.
Let me ask you, whereas the website is extremely easy to access, and God knows Ireland.com, you can hardly get an easier and a better place than that. But for those who would still like to speak with somebody, for those who would like to get a brochure, for those who would like to get something more than the internet, because those who are into the internet wouldn't swap it for anything. But there are a great number of people who still would like to see something and maybe are of the opinion that that's all gone out the window.
No, you can still call 1-800-SHAMROCK and speak to a live agent who will be more than happy to give you advice and help on in planning a trip. We at Tourism Ireland don't book trips. We don't sell anything ourselves, so we're very proud of the fact we can give you that impartial advice, that we can match you with tour companies and operators and give you information that will meet your needs. There is, of course, as you mentioned, Ireland.com. You can also order brochures on the website. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter for the social media people out there. Or, of course, if you are in New York, we are still open to the public. So we're at 345 Park Avenue, open Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
Fantastic. Alison Metcalf, who is Chief of Tourism for North America, I'd like to, first of all, thank you for being on the program and for filling us in on what is consistent good news. And I think that whatever Tourism Ireland is doing here, you know, to attract people to Northern Ireland, it's got to be right, and it's got to be infectious.
I hope so. Let's try and keep it that way.
Okay. Again, friends, 1-800-SHAMROCK, if you'd like to speak with an agent on weekdays. And as always, the best, the Bible of travel to Ireland, Tourism Ireland's website, ireland.com. Ireland.com. And you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.